Can you imagine the level of a mind that watches wrestling?
The audience wants to see action, adventure, wrestling, and plenty of it.
Big men in tights, you know the drill.
Rammer Slammer.
Welcome to Rammer Slammer. This is Ben Flanagan. Today we're going to be talking about the things that we professional wrestling fans hate about professional wrestling. And surprisingly, or not surprisingly, it's pretty easy to come up with a list of things we don't like about professional wrestling. I'm joined by Ben Stark from up in Huntsville to help come up with this list, and we've got a lot to say, unfortunately. And look, we love pro wrestling, and we watch it 5 hours a week, if not more. That's just counting the WWE. That's not counting New Japan Pro Wrestling and NXT and other pro wrestling avenues, but there's just a lot to really chew on when it comes to the negative aspects of the business, whether it's the reality of it, including the misogyny, the drug addiction, and other things that are either directly or indirectly related to the industry itself, or the things about the actual product, like wasted potential and bad storytelling. Ben and I go through all of it, or as much of it as we can think of. So it's not the most fun topic in the world in terms of celebrating this ridiculous traveling circus we know as pro wrestling, but it's a necessary evil to sort of constructively criticize the aspects of it that we think could either no longer exist or simply improve. So if you have anything that you want to share in terms of what you don't like about pro wrestling, please tweet at us at Rammer Slammer. But first, we're going to talk about a few news items, including the news about Brock Lesnar returning to mixed martial arts, plus the return of John Cena and the imminent brand split between Raw and SmackDown. So here we go, my conversation with Ben Stark.
This is Ben Flanagan with Rammer Slammer, and I am once again joined by our friend Ben Stark up in Huntsville. Ben, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for having me on.
Of course, man. There is a lot to cover, really, because we have taken a couple of weeks off. Once again, real life gets in the way, but that's just the way it is. We're on our 16th episode, and we're happy to be this far along, but after taking off another couple of weeks, here we are again with big news in the world of pro wrestling, and we're going to talk about a couple of these headlines here involving Brock Lesnar and John Cena and this brand split that we've covered partially so far. But what we're going to get into a little bit later than that is something I covered at the top of the show, what we hate about pro wrestling. And it's obviously not something we love to talk about, but it's so easy to talk about it and come up with reasons we don't like the product, whether it's WWE or another franchise or company or whatever. There are just things we don't like about it, and we commit so much of our time and our lives to watching this ridiculous thing, yet there's just so much we can't stand, and that would certainly justify us not wasting so many hours on watching this pro wrestling per week. But here we are just doing it without much good reason other than, well, it's kind of entertaining. So before we get to that, Ben, the big news, I guess, the biggest news for WWE and really for pro wrestling in general, WWE's biggest draw, biggest money in TV draw, Brock Lesnar, announced this week, really, that he is going to be fighting again, MMA for UFC. He's going to be fighting some guy named Mark Hunt at UFC 200 in July. And this, obviously, is more than a year after he announced that he signed a new deal with WWE to stay on as a pro wrestler, and that he was closing the window on his MMA career. So he, in an interview with Hannah Storm with ESPN on SportsCenter this week, said that he immediately regretted the decision. It didn't feel right, and that he's a born fighter and that this is what he wants to do. And lucky for WWE fans, it doesn't mean that he's closing the door on pro wrestling. In fact, in that same interview, he said that he would be participating in SummerSlam later this summer after his fight. So we'll see how the fight goes and how he holds up, whether he wins or loses. He didn't really let us know what would happen, no matter the outcome. But it's at least good to know that he is applying himself to both sports, and pro wrestling hasn't lost Brock Lesnar forever.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting news. It's weird news. At first, I thought it was kind of bad news, but it sounds like it's the way he worked it and the way that he worked it with WWE. It seems like it's kind of works out great for everybody, including UFC. So yeah, it's something that I don't like UFC. I don't like MMA. It's so fake, you know, but this is, I feel like this is fine by me. I do wonder how much his last year in WWE, you know, brought back that itch to go somewhere else. You know, you wonder if his storylines had been a little bit stronger, if he had a better, you know, story going into WrestleMania, if his time was spent better, maybe he wouldn't feel this pull to go somewhere else again.
Yeah, so after WrestleMania, when he lost the belt to Seth Rollins, obviously, I thought that he was going to keep it once he announced that he had re-signed with WWE. I thought we were going to be stuck with Brock Lesnar as champion for a while, and that would have been totally fine with me. I love Brock Lesnar pretty much like everybody else, and if he's headlining pay-per-views and pretty much the majority of what WWE is doing, then the company is in better shape than it would be otherwise. So I was pleased with that prospect, but it turns out that he dropped the belt, obviously, and that set up his feud with Undertaker, which would happen for the next few pay-per-views, and then obviously he had the feud with Dean Ambrose that went through WrestleMania, and I think left a lot of people underwhelmed, including probably Brock Lesnar. And you have to assume now that based on those last couple of feuds that his heart just wasn't really in it, and that he was probably thinking about MMA and sort of getting back to that level as a fighter and getting back in MMA shape. Maybe he used wrestling for that. And that's not to say he didn't put on some good matches and he didn't do some good work, but we've talked before on this podcast about how WWE, it didn't seem like over the course of the last year, they didn't get the most that they could have out of Brock Lesnar. And hopefully that's something that they'll do now that they hopefully understand that he's even more of a precious commodity than he already was as a part-timer with the company, somebody who sort of writes his own script, does his own thing. He's done what he has wanted to do for a while now, and that's proven to be a good thing on one level, but it has obviously tied a hand around the back of Vince McMahon and WWE and forced them to sort of improvise on the greater storylines that don't involve the part-timer biggest money draw, Brock Lesnar. So it's a strange conundrum that the company continues to find itself in. And you know, you also have to wonder if the diverticulitis is going to kick back in and it's going to, you know, be the health reasons he cited for quitting MMA will reemerge. You certainly hope that doesn't happen, but it's a wonder that he's able to perform in pro wrestling and not in real fighting. And you can obviously draw the line between the two, but pro wrestling, obviously, as we know, requires a pretty hefty amount of physicality and takes a toll on your body and takes a toll on your health. So, you know, I was excited that he made the decision to quit MMA because I prefer him, obviously, as a pro wrestler. And now he's going to be splitting his time again. And you know, while I hope that he gets what he wants out of MMA, I'd personally rather see him in the square circle.
Yeah, he's also approaching 40, you know, and it's one of those things. If he loses, I don't know what that means, you know, and I feel like that it's kind of a gamble and it kind of makes you wonder, you know, how Vince McMahon and the WWE will perceive him if he decides to do this big, high publicity, you know, loan out for them and then goes and loses. How does that affect their story as him of him as this big, you know, the real deal kind of guy? It may not affect it at all. It may give him something to prove when he comes back to the show, or maybe it'll be a Bray Wyatt promo about how Brock Lesnar has fallen, and it'll give us that Bray Wyatt Brock Lesnar feud that everybody has been clamoring for you want to see that, right? Everybody wants to see that.
I want to see the Wyatts pretty much have a foot in every storyline, if that's possible. Whatever happens with him as a character is obviously going to depend on how he performs in this fight against Mark Hunt guy. And my feeling was if he loses the fight and this sort of like casts him back out of MMA, maybe it's a self-imposed retirement again, then what does that do to his character? Everybody's going to know that he left, he lost, and now he's come back to WWE. Can he be the just dominant, physically imposing character that we've obviously come to know, especially during his most recent run in WWE, sort of this unbeatable force of nature? Is that possible anymore? Do you work in his, I mean, do you work in the diverticulitis thing? Do you work in the fact that he fell short in MMA? I mean, does that mean he's beatable at this point? Because frankly, while I've loved Brock Lesnar in WWE, the outcomes of his matches and his storylines often, for me, fall a little bit short in just knowing the fact that, look, this is going to end with Brock Lesnar just beating everybody up.
Yeah, and honestly, that's what I think in either case, that's what they should do. You know, the Monday after this UFC event, if he loses, start the show with him running out there and just destroying everything. Like, well, if I had to lose there, then, you know what, I'm going to destroy everything here. Or if he wins, then, you know, you bring him right back in and make him this dominant guy. I think that's, I feel like the company has a hesitation to put him at that top spot because he is, in a way, volatile. Because he'll do this kind of thing where he'll just walk into Vince's office and say, hey, I want to go do this other thing for a little bit. So I think that they have issues putting him at the top, but at the same time, I mean, he's your top draw, and he's great, and, you know, he's going to go down in history as one of the best ever, so why not use him to the best of his abilities while you've got him?
So you two were disappointed in how he was used over the past year with the post-WrestleMania feud with...
Oh, God, yes.
With obviously with Seth Rollins, that just amounted to nothing, and is one of the biggest opportunities, missed opportunities in the history of WWE and pro wrestling. I mean, I was so hyped for that, and the way it ended and the way they introduced the Undertaker feud was just one of the great disappointments of my personal fandom with WWE. And then obviously the Undertaker thing, I think, which lasted two or three pay-per-views. And then obviously that led to the, eventually led to Dean Ambrose and Brock Lesnar going at it.
Yeah. I mean, I like
WrestleMania.
I like that Hell in a Cell match with The Undertaker. I thought that was a really great way to pay all that off. But, yeah, basically I loved how he did that thing that I was talking about. After he lost the title, he was enraged and destroyed everything and got sent home. That's great. That's, like, a really great way to write him off for a while. And then he came back and he was on a tear. And on it, but that Battleground match with Rollins hurt everybody. It made Lesnar look like a choke artist. It made him look stupid for not continually pursuing the championship after The Undertaker interfered. And it made, honestly, but even before the interference happened, the way that the match was laid out was honestly insulting to Seth Rollins. I mean, I think that I understand that he's a smaller guy than Lesnar, but that doesn't mean that he's just, you know, this gnat. And I feel like that they made Rollins look really, really, really weak. But at the same time, look, I mean, Lesnar was in the best WWE match of 2015 with that triple threat match. So if they commit to it, they can make this guy as valuable as they can make this guy look as valuable as he actually is. And it just seems like, I wonder if that contract negotiation gave everybody cold feet about keeping him in the spotlight. And that's why he was basically a kind of a sideshow for the rest of the last year, and then a mid-carder, essentially, when he was actually here this year. So, yeah, I think the last run, the last year of his WWE career has been, aside from that Goldberg match, probably the worst use of him. Well, then again, he did lose to Triple H, like at WrestleMania and several pay-per-views, I believe. So, I don't know. I guess it's kind of hit and miss with Lesnar, if I think about it.
Yeah, totally. I mean, when the guy's on, he's just electrifying. And you mentioned that Raw after he lost the title where he just starts beating up cameramen and everybody in sight. It was just one of the, like, most – it was just one of the hottest openings and hours of Raw that I can remember. And it just ended just like that, right? They suspended him, and he disappears for a while. It's like, okay, well, fine, whatever. And it's like, look, you've got the – and maybe that was because Brock wanted to take a break or whatever, and I'm sure he deserved it. Of course, he probably thought he did. And, you know, it's just, again, you talk about wasted potential, and we're going to get into that aspect of the business a little bit later. But, God, Brock Lesnar is just kind of a poster child for wasted potential in pro wrestling. I mean, they've definitely realized some of it, and he has put on incredible performances here and there, but – man, it's just, if you got it, squeeze it dry, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think for me, I was watching when he was during his first run, and I was blown away by everything he did. So for me, he before this comeback in 2012, he was already on kind of an all-timer list. So I don't think his status there has been hurt. I just think it's just like we keep saying, it's just, you know, use what you got. Like, he's going to be great when he shows up. So when he shows up, it's not on him to make everything great. It's on the people writing it and putting the matches together.
Well, and another huge draw for WWE finally came back after a torn labrum, sat him for a while. John Cena came back a couple of weeks ago, cut the great John Cena promo that he typically delivers. I mean, a lot of people consider that repetitive at this point, but it was good to have him back, I think, for pretty much everybody on either side of the John Cena fence, and set up a really interesting rivalry feud between him and AJ Styles, who turned bad guy and delivered once again, as he has done ever since he's joined WWE, some of the best just pure wrestling storytelling that we've seen in a while. It's amazing that I don't think it should surprise anybody that AJ Styles has been a part of that, but the fact that Anderson and Gallows have been right there in tow with him in terms of telling these great stories, that to me, I think, is probably a pleasant surprise. And I know it blows the minds of a lot of wrestling fans who probably never thought that they would see John Cena versus AJ Styles at all, let alone in an ongoing feud that'll probably last pay-per-view. You, as a longtime wrestling fan, somebody who's been aware of the careers of both of these guys, is this something that you're pretty pumped about?
Yeah, I mean, especially looking at AJ Styles' last few years and then looking at Cena's last few years. I mean, really, these guys were two of the top guys last year, even. I mean, they've both been around for so long and have had high points throughout their careers. There's actually, I think, a post on Reddit that compares their careers pretty interestingly. Like, they started right around the same time, and they were kind of like hitting the peaks of the respective companies that they were in at the same time. So I didn't realize that this was a dream match, but yeah, as soon as you kind of put it down on paper, it's a dream match. And at first, the AJ Styles heel turn kind of hurt it for me, but then, because I thought, well, you know, why would this guy refuse the help of his buddies to get the World Heavyweight Championship, but then when he wants to beat John Cena, he takes the money. You know, I thought it made the title look bad, but then I thought about it, and I thought, actually, he never, during the matches, his heavyweight championship matches with Reigns, he never refused help. It just, the help didn't really work out, and so I think that actually ended up being pretty clever storyline, because they could just, you know, kick that heel turn down the road, and still milk the AJ Styles hero pop. I still think there was a lot left for him to be able to do, but I think in this situation, it's a fine approach, and I think it's going to be a fantastic match, and hopefully I'm very interested to see where it goes.
Yeah, it's interesting, the sort of meta level of storytelling that they're incorporating into this whole thing, especially from the other night when AJ had the line, guys like you bury me. I think that's really interesting. And the fact that Cena is sort of allowing that element to it, it's really interesting, because he obviously has this reputation of not giving guys, sharing the spotlight with up-and-comers. And, you know, I think the first promo that AJ cut with Cena right before he, you know, obviously attacked him with Anderson and Gallows, he had mentioned that he's had to watch Cena all these years, and he's been jealous, you know, the fact that it took him this long to get to WWE, and he's had to see Cena just flourish in the business. What do you think of that level of, again, this meta aspect of the storyline?
It's great. This is what they should be doing. Obviously, I don't want them to say, like, you know, whatever. I don't want them to bring, like, booking decisions into it or something like that. But you know, talking about how, I mean, being honest about AJ Styles' career and other places, and the addressing the fan perception that Cena seems to be the golden boy, you know, I think that's great. I think that the way that they're presenting the burial aspect of it is clever, because they're just saying that, they're not saying that when John Cena wrestles people, the writers prefer him and they decide that the people he wrestles lose and then go away, even though that is kind of what has happened in a lot of John Cena feuds. He's just saying that he's kind of inferring that John Cena pulls strings to kind of keep his opponents down. And I think that's interesting. And I think it's a great villain motivation, because it's unfounded and there's no reason to make it any more concrete than that. But it still speaks to reality, and it speaks to the fans that respond to that kind of thing. And I think it's great. You can have it both ways. So I'm totally okay with that, as long as they don't. It's kind of like in movies that we've kind of talked about a few times, that there are, like, the Force Awakens, there are things about that movie that, you know, in a meta way address Star Wars as a whole. You know, when the opening line of that movie is, "This should begin to make things right," that could be taken as a comment on the prequels. That's clever. Of course, if in the movie it talks about how the prequels are bad or something, or if the story of Anakin was a poorly told story or something like that, then that makes you roll your eyes. So as long as they're not breaking kayfabe, I guess that's what I'm trying to say, I'm totally cool with that, and I think it's really clever and a good way to build tension.
Yeah, and we know that these guys are going to put on great matches. It's just what they do, and AJ has obviously done that ever since he's been a part of the company, and it seems like he's just going to keep shooting upward. I mean, I know that he just had a run at the title, and this, in the eyes of many, is a step down, but, I mean, just in terms of the quality of matches, I think most people would probably agree that Cena is a better worker in the ring than Roman Reigns at this point. And he just always, on the biggest stages, manages to put on great matches. And you have a guy like AJ Styles up against him, and these two have so much under their belts already, they're going to want to prove something to each other, and obviously to McMahon and to fans out there who feel a certain way about each guy. So I can't wait to see them in the ring together.
Yeah, I mean, I think to you and me, the championship might need more, but I think to Vince McMahon, being in a match with John Cena is a bigger deal than being in the World Heavyweight Championship match.
Absolutely. And last thing, quickly, Stark, we all know now that there's going to be this brand split that everybody obviously theorized would happen, and they're going to split the roster between SmackDown and Raw, obviously, because SmackDown is moving live to Tuesday night, something that Graham, my brother, and I covered on the last episode of this podcast. And I just quickly want to get your opinion about this proposed brand split. While they haven't specifically addressed the fact that they're going to hold a draft soon and split this roster up, they've done this before, and I think you probably paid closer attention to the product than I did, certainly, when this all went down. Do you feel like this worked before, and do you feel like this can't work again?
Yeah, I remember that was, like I said earlier, that was right after the debut of Brock Lesnar, and it was after the influx of the WCW talent and the NWO. So the roster was huge back then, and they had all these guys about to come up from developmental, and it made perfect sense. And it was really exciting because it was an extension of this feud between Ric Flair and Vince McMahon, where they were kind of in a power struggle over the company and had been for 6 months. And then this was the only way that they could kind of keep going, because Ric Flair had bought part of the company from Shane and Stephanie when they went down. So he came out after Vince unified the company again after the WCW invasion and said, "Actually, you don't own the whole company. I own half of it." And so Vince McMahon brought in NWO to kill the company, which made very little sense, but it kind of makes sense in a comic book kind of way. And then that failed. And then he sent The Undertaker to hurt Ric Flair and his family, and that didn't work. And so that this was the kind of way to make peace, where Vince McMahon would get SmackDown and Ric Flair would get Raw. Eventually, that storyline fizzled out. Within like a few months, Ric Flair became a regular old wrestler, and Vince McMahon became the owner again, brought in Eric Bischoff as the general manager of Raw. So it wasn't owned. It was just managed by Eric Bischoff, and then Stephanie McMahon came in to be the general manager of SmackDown. And then over the next few years, the general managers kind of swapped in and out until eventually the brand split fizzled. So all that to say, it really was exciting and great and a fun direction for the company to go in. And it came from a good storyline, and it was fairly well written. And then it kind of lost, it kind of went off the rails when Vince McMahon and whoever else stopped paying attention. I think now is an interesting time to try that again. It seems like the roster is pretty thin still from the injuries and everything. And I mean, if you think about what that roster looked like in December of last year, it was pretty dire for a little while. But now we're starting to grow again, and there's the NXT guys that are ready to get called up, and Finn Balor and Samoa Joe, and then they're just still hiring, you know, from all over the place. So you can probably have a pretty thick roster here pretty soon, and it makes sense to kind of bring in some competition and beef up SmackDown and make them more equitable shows. However, it all comes back down to the writing, as it always does. And I have to say that the introduction of this split, if the introduction is any indication of how this thing is going to be written, it is already a disaster. because it's one thing to say, okay, here's the ongoing storyline, these two feuding power players, and, you know, the only way to have a tenable status quo is to split them and let them go be their own thing. That seems like you could totally have that story with Shane and Stephanie right now, but that's not the story that they've told. First of all, we still don't know why the hell Shane McMahon is in any sort of power, because he lost his WrestleMania match. And then also, they've been getting along just fine. That's been like the counterintuitive thing about this whole thing, which is an interesting way to go. But then when they announced the split, they were just like, yeah, it you saw it on Bleacher Report, so it's going to happen. We have zero details for you. And here's the new day to dance. And that is embarrassing. That's like, again, bringing back to the movie metaphor, that's like a big twist in a summer blockbuster happening by a character reading an Ain't It Cool news headline, you know? And it's not only is it lazy, it's baffling. And it's kind of infuriating, and everything from this last Monday's Raw seems to indicate that it will continue to be weird and bad, and that they seem to be arbitrarily deciding to start this split in the story, and they're arbitrarily assigning, you know, Stephanie to SmackDown. There's no tension here. There's no drama. It's just stuff happening, and it's a mess already, and maybe this is what they need to go to get to two shows that are more cleanly organized and run, and it will help everything. And, you know, there won't be 5 hours of programming to support, you know, one roster full of stories. But again, if there's any indication in how this is all kicking off, this is going to be ugly.
Yeah. It's weird that they're just not even trying to let it happen organically as part of the storyline. I mean, like you said, it's just happening, and these media outlets are reporting that it's happening, and they're just kind of going with it and letting the real world inform that decision. And it's really strange. And like you said, that segment with Stephanie and Shane was really weird with the New Day. It just didn't come off very well. It shed no new light on what was going on, and they're not giving us a good wrestling reason that this is all happening other than, oh, we're moving it live and it's going to be on a new night and it just has to happen now. And
yeah.
Like, okay, well.
Yeah, like, why didn't they just have a USA executive come out and say, based on sponsorship, branding, synergy,
right,
blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, just release the press release, you know?
Yeah, like, exactly.
It was really strange, and you know, you mentioned too that Shane and Stephanie are getting along fine, which is a strange decision. It seemed like that could be going somewhere, but what's even stranger about that, we talked about how like maybe they haven't made the best choices with Brock Lesnar as a character. Frankly, I think that you could say the same thing about Stephanie lately too, because I mean, she was like the ultimate bad guy
you know, now that Vince obviously went behind the scenes more often than not, somebody who came out on a weekly basis and emasculated all of the male wrestlers, and she obviously had that just strange moment, the Mad Max Thunderdome promo she had at WrestleMania, which was just like the culmination of all things Stephanie. But right after that, I mean, she had to make nice with Shane, and it seemed like she was a good guy again, strangely. Yeah. And now we have this moment on Raw where this old SmackDown GM, Teddy Long, comes out of the blue completely, and Stephanie, she comes out and just totally emasculates him, too, after her run as kind of a good guy. And so it seems like, well, that's over, I guess, if she's being mean to people on TV again. So I have no idea what they're doing.
And after she emasculated the dominant women's champion, which is an idiotic move. Yeah, I mean, we've talked about before about my, in a strange way, possibly misogynistic desire for the character of Stephanie McMahon to get some sort of comeuppance. But here's another example of her dodging that, in that, well, she was, yeah, like you said, she was doing all these evil things for years. It culminates in her, like, screaming at the fans in a Tina Turner wig. And then 2 weeks later, she's a pretty nice lady, and she doesn't deserve comeuppance now. And you just have this women's title revolution, whatever. What a great time to put her in a match with, you know, start a feud with her and Becky Lynch, you know, where she tells Becky Lynch that, you know, steampunk is stupid and you won't ever succeed. And she does the emasculating thing she's done to everybody else. But for now you finally have a character who the fans are behind and that can totally give Stephanie a comeuppance. And you can have this really fun match at SummerSlam, you know, where Becky Lynch and Stephanie McMahon face off and Stephanie McMahon gets what's coming to her. And maybe it also has to do with the fallout of the SmackDown and Raw split. And there's so many logical ways it can go with. But again, because I assume it's all because, well, at the end of the day, Stephanie McMahon is their brand manager and has to, you know, represent the company on Twitter. So they have to toe the line with her as a character on screen for some reason. You get this weird back and forth nothing of a character, and she's great on the mic. She has all this talent, but she has become one of the most frustrating elements of WWE in terms of television, just because there's no consistency and there's no comeuppance, there's no logic. And again, maybe I need to talk with my wife about this. I have some sort of latent misogyny, but yeah, every time Stephanie comes up in a storyline or in a conversation, it's just like, man, she's the worst.
Well, look, I like Stephanie a lot. Like you said, she's one of the best in the company on the mic. Her segments are often really good, and she's a good storyteller. She's a really good actress. So she brings a lot to the company. It's just, like you said, it's a matter of...
She's a good actress, I'll give you that.
It's a matter of consistency. It's a matter of which Stephanie you want to give us on a permanent basis. And I think, honestly, the good Stephanie during this run has been kind of a waste of time, unless you suggested that she had ulterior motives for what she was doing. But at no point did they really do that. I mean, there were wrestlers who were wondering, hey, what's going on here? Is this the same Stephanie? Why are you being nice to me? And she's like, nope, I'm just nice. And that was it. And I don't understand what it does for Stephanie or what it does for WWE or SmackDown when she tells Teddy Long to get to Stephen, kicks him off the show, and says, don't play his music as he, you know, saunters away from the Titantron to boo, another course of booze for Steph. I just don't understand, like, who is this serving? Like, what story are you trying to tell? How are you building Steph's brand? I mean, is this a reemergence of the Authority, what just happened here? No, that's not explicit. What's going on here?
And again, she bullied the top villain in the women's division 2 weeks ago. So, yeah, like you said, it makes no sense. And
I don't bully people. I really don't. Like, I think that's...
I think that there needs to be some sort. You agree with me that there needs to be some sort of comeuppance.
Oh, that absolutely! Because
every time she gets kicked off of TV or lose or do anything like that, she comes back 2 weeks later, and it's just like resetting everything.
No, totally. The ultimate bad guy should always have some sort of comeuppance. I mean, maybe they thought, her getting speared by Roman Reigns in the main event at WrestleMania might have been that. I don't know if that was the best choice.
No, that was, again, that's horrible. I don't want to see that. That makes me not like Roman Reigns.
Right. It's like, yeah, well, okay, your big moment is physically abusing a woman on that
football player.
Yeah,
destroying a mother. Yeah. That's not what I mean when I say come up.
No, I know, totally. And you're totally right. I mean, like, go back one WrestleMania, I thought that moment with Ronda Rousey was fantastic. And, like,
yeah, there you go.
It's kind of a weird thing where it's like, okay, it's not necessarily that we want Stephanie, like, fans want Stephanie to be, like, physically hurt in some way, and if it takes, bringing a woman like Ronda Rousey or whether it's Charlotte or Becky Lynch to do that, that's, like, a weird kind of pleasure I think people might get out of seeing that kind of come up. That's not
what it is? It's wrestling.
Yeah.
It's wrestling. Like, that's the thing, and I think that's the biggest problem here is that you've got this tremendous top bad guy that is an untouchable non-wrestler. So it's not like it's Jim Cornette, or Bobby Heenan. Your top heel is a lady that doesn't wrestle. So it's not like she can have her comeuppance by losing her championship, and she's a lady. And so she's not going to get her comeuppance from getting beat up again, because this is wrestling. And she has a corporate responsibility to appear not just on TV, but also appear a certain way. So she has to be there. She has to appear certain ways at certain times. And it's just, it's the dark side of the Mr. McMahon character. It's like Vince McMahon is one of the greatest, maybe the greatest villain in wrestling history, but that model doesn't necessarily work all the time. And here we have an example where it's in this echo chamber where it can't end, but it also can't continue consistently. And it's so much of what happens on this stupid TV show has nothing to do with wrestling, and it's really frustrating when the top storyline is, not about two guys or two women wanting to compete for a fake championship. I feel like they're removed from that.
There was a time, though, where they settled their differences eventually in the ring. And this is a character who choked out his daughter with a lead pipe in a match between Vince McMahon and Stephanie McMahon. So
she had a match on SmackDown with Brock Lesnar, bringing a background.
Just what a bizarre traveling circus this is. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, straight. And this can get it. I think this is probably about as smooth of a transition as we should make into the larger discussion here of what it is we hate about pro wrestling. And
the answer
I'll
is everything.
I'll let you take the lead. Because, again, I'll go back to what I said before, that it's frustrating that we have to come up with this, but it's also that much more frustrating how easy it is to come up with reasons we diehard pro wrestling fans hate pro wrestling. So I'll let you start it off. What is it that you just truly hate about this business?
I mean, obviously there's the actual things, the concussions, the drugs, the politics, the hurtful stuff that really ruins people's lives. So I guess I would be remiss if I didn't just say that up front. There's a very, very, very dark side to this traveling circus that you called it earlier. And that sucks. And I hate it. But on the lighter side of things, I think overall, it's kind of what we've been talking about. It's a big problem. And it's honestly, it is probably more often than not the case, but just, bad open-ended storytelling, where you set up, and it could be on a feud that takes place over several years, or it could be in a match, where if you've got this feud that is set up and these guys hate each other, but you're 2 years into the feud and all of a sudden, you know, there's a turn and one of them joins the other one for no reason. I can't, surely I could pull up 1,000 examples of this happening, but, I guess a good example might be, the Stone Cold Steve Austin heel turn from 2001, where he feuded with Vince McMahon, like we just talked about, and then he turned bad to join Vince McMahon, because he wanted to win the championship, and that barely made sense. It's since, obviously, clearly was a bad choice, not necessarily to turn him bad, but to have him align with Vince McMahon. So that was a weird thing. It was a great moment, but it was a weird approach. And then the next night, he was joined by Triple H, who he had just had like a blood feud with, and Triple H tried to kill him with a car a few years before that. And that was a really good example of like a totally illogical narrative step forward based on what we had for years before that. And that kind of stuff happens all the time. And it's frustrating because it's hard to write great things. You know, it's hard to sit in a room and write something that's great, but it's not hard to write something that's decent and logical, you know, especially if you're getting paid to do it. And that just goes from A to B to Z and then moves on from there logically. But then on a small scale, it makes no sense that you have these matches where one wrestler is, you know, trying to take out the other wrestler's leg for the entire time, and injure his leg. And then the match ends with, a big body slam where the guy was using his bad leg to pick up all the way to the other guy and he doesn't sell it at all. So those are two very old school things, but it's what makes wrestling great. It's when somebody asks why I watch wrestling, if I say, well, it's because of the storytelling, both macro and micro, it makes me look like an idiot when that person goes and watches wrestling and says, yeah, but you know, that guy's leg was injured a second ago and now he's using it like to do these hard things. Or, hey, but, you know, that guy hated that guy, but now they're best friends and with zero explanation. Makes me look bad, you know? And maybe I'm the idiot here for expecting something greater, but that's probably my biggest thing is that I said earlier that I hate MMA, and it's just because I prefer, in all of life, I prefer a narrative. And if that's what sets you apart is the fact that your medium is a narrative medium, then you've got to get the narrative part of that down. And it's crazy to me that on such a large scale, the biggest wrestling company in the world gets that very essential part of their art form wrong.
Yeah, it's interesting. You say you need a narrative. That's the reason you hate MMA or just don't like it or go for it. I mean, think of the Brock Lesnar news, right? I mean, what is the narrative in the Brock Lesnar MMA thing? I mean, you know, you could romanticize it in that it's like, look, this has been on his mind for the past year, and he wants to redeem himself as a fighter after falling short in it, by his own standards, and this is his big moment to do that. Or you can just say, well, the way it worked out was he wanted to fight again, and he just needed an opponent, and so they picked this jabroni, and now he's got an opponent, and it's just going to happen now, you know? And
yeah,
and
that
also
sounds like Raw.
Yeah, and also, like, one of their biggest stars dropped out, and, you know, of UFC 200, and now they need to draw, like, Brock Lesnar, you know, even though he denied that during his interview. So, yeah, I totally agree. There's not really much fodder there, especially if you're making the transition from pro wrestling to MMA. That's probably... It's probably not something you should do cold turkey, but, you know, I'm not a fan either. But, no, I mean, going back to the real-life stuff, you're exactly right. That's the stuff that is totally worth disliking, worth spending time discussing in terms of why this is not as appealing as we have found it over the years. If you just look at the dark side of it, all of the far too early deaths of wrestlers, male and female, that have obviously happened over the past many years, as long as the business has existed. It always
begs the question from me, why does this happen? What is it about this business that ends up ending the lives of so many of these great performers so early? And you know, it's not fair to make a direct correlation between wrestling and the deaths of these performers. And you know, it's on them. They're adults, and you know, they live their they make the choices, and they choose to live their lives certain ways. But you know, you have to consider, well, what lives are they leading? I mean, is it a result of pro wrestling? Is it a result of choices they made within the industry and things they thought they needed to do to survive? And you know, is that just the make of the business? And you know, those are difficult questions, and again, they're not fair to the business as a whole, because I mean, there are plenty of totally healthy, totally together people who, you know, are from the same era, who have, you know, managed to live their lives according to, you know, a healthy plan and like normal people. So that's not fair, but I mean, there has just been such a high volume of it. And again, it makes you scratch your head and wonder, what is it about pro wrestling? So yeah, that's something that, yeah, I hate about it. I totally do. And you just wonder, you know, how do these dependencies develop? And, you know, we'll just have to ask wrestlers that, you know, who have lived through it and have seen it and, you know, have written books about it and have given countless interviews about it. And you just kind of have to hear it from them. And they tell the darker side of the business, but it's a business, even though they acknowledge that those things exist and that there are negative things about it, it consumes their lives and they remain a part of it. And it's their choice to, you know, stick with it. Some have escaped it and left it behind, but for the most part, anybody who is involved with pro wrestling is probably going to stay involved with it for the rest of their lives in some capacity. So it's tough, but if we're just
talking... Scott Steiner just opened the Shoney's. So...
Scott or Rick?
Scott.
Oh,
no, Rick Steiner is a realtor. So he may have helped Scott find the real estate. But yeah.
if we want to... talk about just strictly from a wrestling standpoint, yeah, I mean, it goes back to the wasted potential thing. I mean, I just think so much potential has been wasted. Again, we go back to the Brock Lesnar, Seth Rollins thing. That's one of the, again, I'll reiterate, it's one of the biggest disappointments of my personal wrestling fandom. I mean, I just thought that had the potential to be one of the greatest matches and feuds of all time, just with these guys who were just so immensely talented, and you just burn it for this recycled, lame feud that didn't reach its full potential before that, and only, I don't know, barely reached it when they finally did it in 2015. It's just a total shame, and it happens all the time. And you know, you see all these lists of wrestlers who, you know, WWE wasted the potential of these wrestlers, and you see guys like on the current roster, like Cesaro is having a nice run now, certainly, and is, you know, getting more, has more of a presence than he ever has. But you know, a lot of people feel like it's too late. I mean, Daniel Bryan was another guy who had climbed the ladder, and it took forever for him to finally reach the pinnacle, and he did. But I think for a lot of people, it was too little, too late. And then, you know, you've got Cody Rhodes, obviously, who just left. Dolph Ziggler is the guy who's been hanging on and putting in so much work, and for what, right? And I mean, now he's king of the pre-show, unfortunately. So, you know, I go back to discussions we've had about like Ricky Steamboat, you know, a guy who I think was just a total package in WWE, put on one of the greatest matches of all time, and that was really the highest possible level that he reached at WWE. And like you have emphasized over and over, the guy obviously had a lot of success with NWA and was the top guy in another company. But I mean, he should have been the guy in WWE. He just had it all. So, you know, what are you doing? I mean, Dean Ambrose is another guy where it's like, okay, he has his shortcomings too, but we've talked so many times on this podcast before about what all he does have, and you know, the way the fans have responded to him, and the way that WWE has sort of squandered it and reduced him to a career mid-card guy, even though the fans say otherwise. Why is this guy not a top guy when we are screaming as soon as his music hits? So wasted potential for me is probably the biggest thing I just can't stand about the business.
Well, I mean, you bring up another one that bugs me is not listening to fans. You know, I mean, you see it, obviously, it's been the major kind of subtext in WWE for the last few years is Roman Reigns. Like, people don't want to cheer that guy like he's the superhero, but they keep telling us that he is. Or Seth Rollins comes back, and he's clearly the hero, the conquering hero that came back from an injury and never lost his championship. And the fans love him, and they want him back. And, nope, you're not allowed to cheer him. And it's one of those things that, again, it's an old school thing where it doesn't make any sense. Is that, look, if the fans don't like somebody, great, you know, like figure out why and then capitalize on that and make them really hate that guy. If the fans like somebody, let them and figure out what they like about him. And then, I mean, they do it all the time with catchphrases, you know, with the New Day, you know, they found out that the crowd likes that act. So they took that act and they're friggin' pounding it into the ground, as they should be, to sell merchandise and to get YouTube hits and everything else. And that's the way you do it. So it's weird that they can listen to the fans in so many ways, and they pride themselves on being this kind of like fan experience company. It's not even a wrestling company. It's this global entertainment brand that's all about the fans. But then at the very top, they don't give a crap about what the fans want. It goes beyond just this current moment. It's something that happened all the time in WCW, you know, where Hogan was on top and had the control to keep himself there. So it didn't matter how popular Goldberg or Diamond Dallas Page or Sting got, they were never allowed to, you know, have that long top level run that Hogan or Kevin Nash had, they also had part of control in the company. So it's that kind of thing where it seems like there's a contempt for the fans, and you can't have that if the fans are all you got, which is kind of the case.
Yeah, and, you know, instead of being stubborn about it, then if the fans are wrong, they should show fans why they're wrong and show why Roman Reigns has as much substance as they think he does as the future of the company. And to WWE's credit, I think they've done that to an extent with Roman Reigns, especially with the matches that he's put on, so that they're capable of doing that for the most part. When they're not listening to fans, they're just going to drive it down their throats, regardless of how loud they boo. Or they're not going to do it. They're going to do the opposite, despite how loud fans cheer for certain guys. So it's really strange, and you're exactly right. And to go back sort of to the real world, like one of the biggest things that has just really bothered me as a wrestling fan over the years, especially going back and watching a lot of Attitude Era stuff. And it's really been a part of WWE for a long time, but just the sheer misogyny of the business. And, yeah, you know, they've obviously made, unfortunately, it's taken this long to take such huge steps, but the big leap that they obviously took and the acknowledgement that they made recently in converting the Divas title into the Women's Championship, that's a great thing to do. And again, like, you know, you don't want to harp on the negative, but why did it take this long to do that? And why have you been doing what you've been doing with women for so long in this company? Look, if you want to just be an exclusive men's boys club, just do that. And don't pretend to be something that empowers women, you know, and don't pretend to incorporate them in a way that is positive and something that really, you know, joins the feminist movement. And I think that's going a little too far in saying that, but, you know, it's just, again, you go back and watch some of the stuff and the way that they incorporate women into the act, and it's just another level of the sideshow element and traveling circus element of professional wrestling that really feels gross, and it makes you wonder, why am I still doing this? Why am I still watching this if they're treating women this way? I mean, do you feel that way?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, throw racism, homophobia, exploitation of little people, you know, throw all that stuff in the same pot where it's like, man, like even, you know, even on a great card like WrestleMania 3, you still had this, you know, mixed little person, regular sized person match with these guys with very racist names. It's that kind of stuff that's like, oh, well, I guess let's not forget where we all came from, you know, and it's one of those things that with some distance, it could be funny, you know, but you can't ever connect from those people, you know, in that moment that had to do that. You think about the divas of the Attitude Era, you know, these objectified women, and what they felt like they had to put themselves through to get on this TV show, and got not much but a bunch of, you know, perverts staring and screaming at them in return. So I'm glad we've gotten past that. I'm glad that racism is a smaller part. Every now and then you still get this weird thing where, like, just very recently, Mark Henry was like buddies with the New Day or something like that, or with the primetime players. And it was just like, there's zero reason for these guys to know each other than they're black. And you're kind of afraid sometimes that that's still how parts of that company work. And Alberto Del Rio left the company a few years ago because a high-ranking person in WWE said something very racist. And so it's still out there. But it's sad that it takes, like, fan movements to change it and not just the convictions of the people in charge. But hopefully that's starting to change. And, it's definitely right there with the drugs. And who knows how much of that, in a way, dehumanization that you get through exploitation, how much of that contributed to drugs, you know, and suicide and all these other things that have cost the lives of so many wrestlers.
No, you know, it's interesting. I think it was a couple of years ago on Martin Luther King Day when I think R-Truth came out and he, like, jobbed to somebody in, like, a minute-long match, you know? It's just, like, little things like that, like, little symbols like that, where it's just like, really, you're going to do that? You're going to force R-Truth, who gets so little TV time to begin with, on Martin Luther King Day, he's going to come out and just get pulverized after, like, a minute in the ring. Great, great job. And, you know, you go back to, like, God, obviously this Hulk Hogan story, which has nothing to do with pro wrestling, but, you know, obviously the fact that he's allegedly said all of these racist things and has been painted in such a horrible light now, deservedly, if those things are true, it just reminds you of some of the things that have happened under Vince McMahon's watch. Like, I mean, you remember when Booker T now infamously said the N-word during a promo where he's calling out Hulk Hogan. I can't remember if that was pre Vince McMahon WCW where he had bought
yes.
it, but that has become like one of the quote unquote infamous moments in WWE history. And then you've got this thing a few years later where Vince McMahon says the N-word to Booker T, and it's just part of the act. You know, it's meant to be funny. So it's like, okay, well, we'll just let that double standard fly, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like there have just been weird moments like that. And going back to the misogyny, I mean, you just see – I think there was a clip that I saw on, like, YouTube recently. I was watching, like, What Culture videos, and then I clicked on something else, and it's this, like, backstage sketch thing, which is a whole other thing I can't stand about WWE. But it's a thing where I think it was Trish Stratus is in, like, the dressing room with – Triple H, and she's asking him to, like, teach him how to escape wrestling holds, and he's like, here's what you do, you stand in front of me and you bend over, and she, like, bends over, and they're obviously in this compromising position, and then Stephanie walks in and sees them, and it's just this, like, ridiculous sophomoric bit of just juvenile jock humor that has become so synonymous with Vince McMahon's WWE, no matter what era it happens to fall in. But, I mean, again, it just comes back to the objectification of women in so many different capacities. And while, again, that has evolved at the company, thanks to whomever, I'm not sure who deserves the credit for finally making that happen, but it's good to see these athletes like Charlotte and Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch and Paige and these performers who bring so much to the table in the ring, on the mic, no matter what. They have really, truly legitimized women's professional wrestling. And I'm glad that WWE has finally come around. It's just taken far too long for them to do that.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned something that's on the lighter side of things that's definitely on my list. And a small part of it is, well, maybe not a small part of it, maybe a major part of it is those backstage skits you're talking about where they have the worst set design in history. And then they have a roving cameraman who is a person, you know, who's set up as a figure in this universe, privy to all of this information that we should not be privy to, and the characters standing in front of this wide-angle lens that's 6 inches from their faces act like the camera's not there, often in service of atrocious comedy. And that's overall my point, is comedy, for the most part in wrestling, is awful. When it's right, when you have somebody like The Rock or The Miz or The New Day or Bobby Heenan, you know, in writing or performing the comedy, it's great. And it's one of the best things about wrestling, you know, and it's a perfect way to lighten the mood and to set up storylines. But when so much of the show is dedicated to Dean Ambrose, you know, prop comedy and gold dust poop jokes with R-Truth and all the stuff that, that again, like you said, kind of, it may just be a Vince McMahon thing. It's so embarrassing. And it's so harmful. And it's again, one of those things where if somebody's like, why would I watch pro wrestling? And I'm like, oh, it's about the storytelling and blah, 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 blah. Here, tune in anytime. I would never say that because Lord knows that person I recommend pro wrestling to is going to tune in to the middle of a Teddy Long, Stephanie McMahon skit and be scratching their heads and possibly vomit and black out at how awful whatever they're watching is. So that's a big thing for me is again, comedy can be great and it can be one of the best things about pro wrestling, but for the most part, it's often the absolute worst because for whatever reason, this may be something that David Shoemaker recently brought up on his Ringer Wrestling podcast. For some reason, like within wrestling, people can't be funny. Like John Cena is a funny guy outside of wrestling and The Rock is a funny guy outside of wrestling. But these days, The Rock is not funny at all when he shows up. And John Cena is more often than not much better at the intense, serious promo than he is any sort of comedy. So, yeah, it's just weird that pro wrestling is kind of this vacuum of intentional comedy, but a great resource for unintentional comedy.
Yeah, and I think it's all about the individuals. Like you said, like if this wrestler happens to have a knack for comedy or is just naturally funny, then he can be funny on the show. Like, let him be funny. Let him or her write his and her own promos. Like, Kevin Owens is a great example of that.
Yeah, there you go.
He's hilarious, and like just the other night on Raw, when during that bizarre but pretty interesting promo between all six Money in the Bank ladder match participants, Kevin Owens was fantastic. I mean, Kevin Owens. There was a moment during his match with Dean Ambrose on Raw the other night where mid match, he walks over to the announcer's table, grabs a headset, and starts screaming at Byron Saxton and telling him why he's going to win the Money in the Bank match before he gets socked in the head by Dean Ambrose. It's just really great stuff. I mean, in The Rock, like you said, I mean, I've gone back and watched some of his promos, like The Rock and Jericho and Stone Cold. Obviously, these guys are just natural born entertainers who have knacks for comedy, and they should absolutely be as funny as they can be on the show. So, yeah, I mean, there are just guys and girls who are better at it than others. Charlotte can be really funny, too. Like, she's great. And there are other you know, women performers on there who have a knack for it as well. So you're right. If they can do comedy, they should do it. But, God, they should never force people to do it. And while I'm thinking about it, going back to the misogyny thing, I think I was texting with you while I was watching this. I pulled up this just really bad WWE pay-per-view from, like, 2002 or so, this Bad Blood, where the first match is Scott Steiner versus Test for whoever wins the, quote, managerial services of Stacy Keibler. And it's just the grossest thing ever. And it was a bad match and just poorly framed feud. And it, you know, again, it forced Stacy Keibler, this performer, to, like, this is the only way she can be a part of this, right? If she is the object of affection for these, you know, jacked bros, you know?
Yeah.
So,
well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because when I was trying to think of an example of when like you said, when some people just can't do comedy. And it made me think of the storyline that probably led up to that, which is when Stacy Keibler became Test's manager, she started to brand him and started to call his fans the Testicles. And so that was the story. And you had this stupid thing that's not funny being sold by Test, RIP, and Stacy Keibler, who are both talented in their own different ways, but comedy is not either of their strong points. And you've got these writers that are coming up with this inane stuff, giving it to people that can't pull it off, even if it was, you know, if Bobby Heenan had written it. So, yeah, that was, it's funny that that's the example I thought of, and that's what you pulled up. That's the match where Scott Steiner basically does a belly flop off the apron. Is that correct?
Yes. It's horrible. I think he botches like the first thing that they're required to do in the match, and it's just really.
I mean, speaking of the brand split, just don't watch any more Raw pay-per-views from that year. If I recall, SmackDown was by far the better show, and Raw was just – they also had a period of time where Eric Bischoff would just come out and scream HLA, which stood for Hot Lesbian Action, and
oh
they would
my
just
God.
Have ladies making out in the ring. So that was less than, you know, 13 years ago, and we've come a long way.
One of the running themes of that pay-per-view was a redneck decathlon between – Stone Cold Steve Austin and Eric Bischoff. Again, this like comedy bit that ran for 3 straight hours, you know, in between matches that just fell flat every single moment. And so, yeah, I mean, it's not one of their biggest strengths, but when they have guys like The Rock who have just unlimited charisma and are really funny and are capable of writing and delivering hilarious promos, give them a long leash, you know, and let them exploit that aspect of their talent, rather than forcing it upon, you know, people like Sheamus or these other guys who may be not as inclined to be funny on the air. So, you know, one more quick thing that I just it really bugs me about pro wrestling lately, especially in the era of Extreme Rules and obviously the Elimination Chamber, are these just overly thought out gimmick matches that they put on at these pay-per-views that, you know, I'm used to the days of the gimmick match being as complicated as a steel cage match or a submission match or a no disqualification match. That's just something I wish that they had stuck to their guns over the years instead of getting, you know, evolving into things like strap matches and then eventually asylum matches or flag matches or whatever.
Scaffold matches.
Yes, yeah, streets. You know, I know people might say street fights have their value, but I mean, just keep it in the ring and keep it simple. Is that something that bugs you, or are you kind of more open to the gimmick matches?
When I first got into wrestling, I thought it was the greatest thing about wrestling. You know, was that oh my god, the ladder match is like the most logical kind of match to have because it's not about the pin; it's just about who can, you know, climb up or. Stuff like that I thought was great, probably because one of the first wrestling matches I ever watched was that Hell in a Cell Mankind Undertaker match. But, yeah, no, I totally agree that if you're telling your story right, then a gimmick should just be something, some sort of extension of the story. You know, if it's two guys that keep brawling all over the arena and keep getting counted out, put them in a steel cage or for some reason, put him in a lumberjack match. That's probably one of the lamest matches, match types I could think of. Or if they keep breaking the rules to win or to get one over, then yeah, make it a no DQ match. And honestly, the fact that they have the Extreme Rules match and the no DQ and the street fight, those are all the same thing. It's just a no DQ match. They should just make that. So yeah, I agree that an overabundance of those things. I mean, you should really check out some like 2000 era WCW because not only does it have the worst comedy ever written by Vince Russo, it also has a different ridiculous gimmick match every single show. They had this 3-level cage that was in the movie Ready to Rumble starring David Arquette. that was actually, you know, a main event of at least one pay-per-view. So there's so much goodness in there. At one point, I think there's infamously a Judy Bagwell on a pole match where a forklift was holding up Buff Bagwell's mom, and whoever reached her first won the match. So, yeah, so I agree. It's atrocious. It should only be brought out. That's what I don't like about these pay-per-views that have these built-in gimmicks, you know, where you have Hell in a Cell, even though you don't really have any feuds that, you know, call for a Hell in a Cell match, or Extreme Rules, where, you know, you just have to make up all this stuff, or TLC, which is just the worst name for a wrestling pay-per-view in general. So, yeah, I'm with you. Over elaborate ones. Sometimes they can be great, you know, but it's only great because of the story that leads into it. It's never great just because of the gimmick.
It all comes back to the storylines, for sure. And it's funny you mentioned the WCW.
I think it was the mid-90s when I was first really kind of getting into the WCW and appreciating aspects of it and performers within it. And that's obviously when WWF stars like Hulk Hogan and Macho Man made their exodus and transitioned to WCW. But they had this pay-per-view called Uncensored, which was kind of the, I don't know, it kind of paved the way for Extreme Rules. So I guess that's kind of like the modern Uncensored. But, you know, I watched it initially and thought, oh, man, all these different matches are so cool. And I go back and watch it now and think, this is terrible. This
so
is
bad.
Ridiculous, and this is why Extreme Rules exists, unfortunately. But Extreme Rules is actually a fun pay-per-view this year. So, I mean, if you can make them work, like you said, make sure that it's all about the story, and there have to be reasons for the types of matches that there are, instead of just hanging, you know, chainsaws and kendo sticks and straitjackets from the top of cages. It just makes no sense whatsoever. So, yeah, gimmick matches, just take it down a notch. Keep the gimmick matches. Just take, you know, don't overthink it and tell good stories. So I'll leave it to you, man. Is there anything else on your mind just in terms of what it is you don't like about pro wrestling?
No, I mean, again, I just feel like it comes down to story, and it comes down to letting the guys in the ring do their thing. And I think that so much of these things that we mentioned are all extra curricular things to actual wrestling. And I guess it seems stupid to a lot of people that it's like, well, it's a fake sport, so why do you even care about that part of it? But at the end of the day, that's why we're watching it, and that's where the stories should really be unfolding. So I think that's kind of the overarching thing for me is all this extra stuff outside of the ring. It needs to be there for sure, but it needs to be controlled. It does not need to be the focus. And I feel like since we keep coming back to WWE, I think that's oftentimes they deliver so well in the ring. You know, they've got these incredible guys now on this roster. So if they can just focus on, you know, making the outside ring stuff as good as that, they'll have a really great thing going. And so that's my biggest thing that I hate about pro wrestling is things that aren't pro wrestling.
Yeah. Oh, and how about celebrity wrestlers, right?
Yeah.
Lawrence Taylor and the Green Arrow
Stephen,
guy.
Stephen Amell, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if they David can do
Arquette.
That.
Yeah. David Arquette. Oh, that's another
former
great thing about
former champion,
yeah.
David Arquette.
Former WCW champion, yeah. Dennis Rodman, Karl Malone, also
yeah.
Stars.
I'll tell you what, though.
Late
I, went back, and watched the Hogan versus Goldberg match on Nitro when Goldberg won the title. Just one of the greatest moments in wrestling history.
Yep, that was right there.
Yeah, and
that was right there at the beginning
match
of my tenure as a wrestling fan.
Oh, during the match, to preserve Goldberg's chances of winning clean, Kurt Hennig starts to walk out. He's ready to interfere and make sure Hollywood Hogan wins. Diamond Dallas Page and Karl Malone follow him. Karl
yes.
Malone, he gives him a diamond cutter to make
yeah.
sure that he stays out of the match. So, hey, Karl Malone's a part of history, man.
Yeah, Karl Malone is actually pretty decent in the ring, too. I mean, he may be pretty high up there in terms of celebrities that also wrestled.
Yeah.
And I love that he had matching gear to DDP. He was all in.
Yeah, and I think my last thing here, the thing I think I hate most about wrestling right now is the fact that Seth Rollins is doing the pedigree as his finishing move. Hate it.
Man, oh, well, you know, we could go another direction, too, and I hate to, maybe we should, but the 50-50 approach to the kid family friendly thing in WWE, you know, where sometimes they're so worried about kids hurting each other that they ban the curb stomp, but then they make a big moment out of Shane McMahon jumping off of the roof, you know, as if no kid can just climb onto the roof and act like he's Shane McMahon and kill himself. So it's that kind of stuff that it's this double standard and claiming to be a family friendly thing. And then they have people saying bitch and stuff on TV. It's like, well, look, I'm a grown man. I don't care which of those things you do. Just pick one and be consistent and do it for the right reasons. You know, there's no reason that a wrestling show can't be family friendly, but there's also no reason that it, you know, ECW worked. So, this whole thing, and that all comes back to that curb stop thing, which he recently, Rollins opened up about it on This Is Jericho or whatever this podcast is called. And he basically came down to Vince McMahon was afraid that kids were going to do it to each other and hurt themselves, and they were going to get in trouble for it. Because driving another kid's head face first into the wrestling mat is potentially dangerous. So they gave him the pedigree.
We promise we're fans of pro wrestling. I mean, we say we hate all these things.
I will say real quick, I'll do the thing that I almost always do. Most of the things that I do not like are not as present in New Japan pro wrestling, Lucha Underground to a lesser extent, and NXT. So, you know, there are options. Or if you go on the network and watch old NWA, WCW, you know, that's a lot of these things are missing from there. Or if they're there, they're buried way in the undercard. I mean, we talked about the backstage vignettes. The backstage vignettes in Lucha Underground are phenomenal. They're filmed like a movie, and the camera is not a person, you know, it's a omniscient figure in the stories. So I love pro wrestling. I'm having a bit of a spat with WWE, and it's going on several months at this point. So if I sound a bit sour on that, that's because I'm a bit sour on it.
Well, I mean, the feud can go as long as possible until, you know, the lights go out and you disappear and the Undertaker appears and he's with WWE.
Bray Wyatt is going to come out and beat me up.
All right, Ben. Thanks for talking this out with me.
Thanks. I feel a lot better.
Yeah, truly. Ben Stark up in Huntsville, thanks again. And if you hate anything about pro wrestling, please tweet at us at Rammer Slammer. Thanks a lot.
Rammer Slammer is produced and edited by Ben Flanagan for the Alabama Media Group and AL.com. Find us on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Rammer Slammer. Thanks for listening.